We're going to have a great 12 weeks. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself and my background. Before I do that, I want to find out, even though I haven't told you what we're going to do, what do you want to get out of this? You know it's about mindfulness. You've heard a little bit about mindfulness. What are you expecting to get out of this? Then I'm going to tell you about myself, and then yes, go ahead.
A lower heart rate.
Lower heart rate. Okay, what else?
Free period.
Free period. Okay, what else? Relieve stress. What else?
Have a good time.
Have a good time? We're definitely going to do that. What else?
Become closer as a family.
Become closer as a family. That's nice. What else? What else? Is anyone nervous?
No.
Okay. So, that's good. I'm gonna tell you a few things about myself, and a little bit about how I started doing this and what I do. I started practicing mindfulness in 1982, so that's probably before all of you were born, and I have been actively doing that since then. And I've spent time. I did a three-month retreat in 1985, which was 16 hours of silent meditation a day for 3 months. The only time you spoke was once every 3 days. You had a 15-minute interview with one of your teachers. And then every evening there was one lecture on meditation for 50 minutes. And the rest of the time it was silent meditation with about 100 other people. So it was just you and your mind in a big room in winter in Massachusetts, which was about as bad as this winter. So you got to deal with your mind quite a bit, which was interesting and really hard. I spent 12 months in the Himalayas in northern India and in Nepal. I did retreats with the Dalai Lama before he won the Nobel Peace Prize, so he wasn't very well known. And there were streams of Tibetan refugees still coming across the border, walking across the border from Tibet into Nepal and northern India. And I did practice. I learned techniques and practices and received a lot of training there. And I saw the power of doing this type of mindfulness practice. When you have to deal with stress, with a nation overrunning your country and destroying your monasteries and torturing your monks and nuns and destroying your sacred texts and everything else that happened in the Cultural Revolution when the Chinese went into Tibet, you see that when an individual can go through all of that and maintain a sense of positivity that's not naive, but that's able to dig deeper for inner resources and survive that, you realize that this is a very powerful tool. It's used for stress reduction. It's used for calming the mind. It's used to lower the heart rate. It's used for enjoyment. But when you see people who've dedicated 20, 30, 40 years to this and are able to withstand global catastrophe like that, you realize, oh, this is something that might be worth investing some time into. It's a challenging practice and it's an easy practice. The instructions are really simple, and in this room, there's nothing you can do in your meditation that's wrong. If you have no sense of stillness, if your mind is tormenting you, if you're daydreaming, if you fall asleep, if you get giggly, if you get angry, if you do your homework in your head, none of that is wrong. That is one of the most challenging instructions, because we're very critical of ourselves. We want to make ourselves wrong. We have very rigid and limited ideas of what doing it right is. So the probably the most challenging instruction you're going to get is that there's nothing that can happen to you when you're trying to practice mindfulness that's wrong. And even if you spend your hour insisting that you're doing it wrong, that's still not wrong. That's all part of it. And since I've been doing this for a long time, I have experienced a lot of different things. So I will probably be familiar with everything that you experience. So that's also going to be useful. Sometimes what happens is you get tormented, and you didn't realize how tormented your mind can make you. And sometimes you have incredible happiness and joy and ease and peace. One good experience doesn't mean that your next experience is going to be good. These are non-linear. So it's not like when you study really hard, you expect to do well, you do well, you continue studying the same subject, you will continue to learn more and accumulate. Mindfulness isn't always like that, at least not experientially. So you go from a really positive experience to total distraction, boredom, sleepiness, irritation, and frustration. And that can switch within like a tenth of a second. So what you're going to learn is you're going to learn how to anchor yourself somewhere that is not dependent on your experience. So you're going to start to become interested in your experience rather than interested in the content of experience. And it's an easy instruction, but it's also a challenging one. I wanted to tell you a little more about myself. So I've been practicing and doing this and studying with all kinds of teachers and I trained the staff at Philadelphia Magazine, and when you're on a magazine, they have a lot of stress. They were really stressed, but they had fun. And I've worked in treatment houses, transition homes for people who are in recovery, who have led very rough lives, who are trying to move back into the world. They have a lot of challenges, very hard to still the mind. I work with students all over the world. I have students in Copenhagen and Germany and Amsterdam and London and Guatemala and around the States. I just was at a conference in California. So I've seen a lot of different cultures. I've done retreats in Israel. I have a group of students in their 20s who I've been working with for 3 years now. We did a 2.5-day retreat, and now we meet by phone every 2 weeks, and we're using mindfulness as the background for what we're exploring, and we're exploring cultural development. What we're going to do in this class is we're going to look at tools for mindfulness, ways to watch the breath, ways to focus your thoughts, ways to explore your experience so you gain perspective and context and space. But we're also going to learn, we're going to look at the last 600 years of cultural development, what happened when we moved from modernity to postmodernity, why does everyone feel so stressed and alienated? You know, if you go back to biographies and diaries and letters from the 1600s, nobody's talking about being stressed. So where'd that come from? Why did it come from? It's not a personal problem. It's not a technological problem. If we got rid of our cell phones, we still would be stressed. And there are reasons for it that aren't your fault. So we're going to learn about that, which is also, it's going to teach you how to explore your experience personally in a way that is larger than just your own personal experience. And this is another way to cope with stress. We're also going to do a little bit of the basics of brain science. What are the parts of the brain? Why does mindfulness work? Why do you feel so out of control? And what's happening in the teenage brain? Because there's something particular that happens in the brain between the ages of either 15 and 22 or 15 and 30. And it parallels another growth process that we have when we were between sort of 2 and 6. and obviously some of the out of control and frustrating experiences that you experience in adolescence and early adulthood remind your parents of when you were small. But there's a reason for that. And again, it's not only because you may be rebellious or irritated or frustrated. There's also a physiological component to this. So as we learn to understand the science of brain development, you become interested in your experience. You're not going to be able to control it because there's a growth thing happening. It's just like you're not going to be able to control if your feet grow before the rest of you grow and you're slightly off balance. But you can be interested in it. And that's how we're going to work with stress. And also, kind of as a side to all of this, because we are specifically working with mindfulness for stress and ease, and we're going to do it in the ways that I talked about, you may also start to experience a sense of depth. One of the things that happens when we focus in the way that we're going to, you start to experience a sense of depth that's hard to explain where it comes from. And that's going to be an added component to this, which some people in the last class had really powerful experiences. They just sat down and started doing breath meditation, and they started experiencing a sense of spaciousness and a sense of consciousness. So these things can happen too, and we can talk about those too. So a lot of really good things happened last class, and I'm curious to see what we're going to do this time. And I know Miss McKay, she's smiling because she had a great experience last time. Yeah, that was really cool.
And I think I experienced all those things that you described.
I bet.
From the whole, like, the almost falling asleep and the giddy kind of leaving and the giddy feeling.
Yeah.
These guys are they have different demands on them than the last class.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at a point when there are a lot of deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be interesting to see, you know, I think that maybe... they're really ready.
Good.
So.
Okay. So, does anyone have anything else that they want to get out of this class now that you've heard a little bit about what we're going to do? Any other thoughts? You just want to get you ready to get into it?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Okay, good. Now, I record these classes, and I will post them afterwards. And what we'll do is it'll be, Ms. McKay will give you the URL, but it'll be amyedelstein.com/BodineSenior, SR, because we have another one for the junior class. I'm not going to edit them, but you can fast forward them and practice the meditations. You can download them, and if you end up editing them and pulling out the meditation, send them back to me so I can post them. I think what I'll do is I'll take that chair because it's a little taller. Yeah. Yeah. Now, usually we start with breath meditation. I use these bells to take us in and take us out.
You want a little less light?
Yeah, it's probably good. I guess the only rule in meditation is, as we're doing the mindfulness exercises, if you feel headaches, open your eyes. You don't have to try it with your eyes closed. You can just look at the floor. And the only rule is just leave the people next to you alone. So, you know, if you can't sit quietly, that's okay. Just look at the floor. You can stop, but resist the temptation to get everyone else involved in your process. So the first thing we're going to do is, if you can sit up straight, it's better if your back isn't against the back of the chair. When we make our spine erect, it's a lot easier to concentrate. The Tibetans have a really elaborate cosmology, which I don't necessarily believe in, but it's interesting. And so they have a lot of they describe the various hell realms, and they say that if you meditate with your head like this, you can see it's kind of an arrogant position. So they say that you're going to be born in one of the hell realms for intense pride. And if you meditate with your head down like this, you tend to fall asleep really quickly. And they say that if you meditate like that, you end up being born in one of these hell realms where it's called sloth and torpor, where you're just eternally in this realm filled with sludge and gray mass, and you can never think clearly. So they do these things to get the young monks to kind of buck up. So sit with your spine erect. You can have your hands just comfortably there. It's better if you uncross your legs and just have your feet on the floor like that. And either close your eyes or just focus on the floor in front of you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ring the bell and follow the sound and the vibration of the sound as far as closely as you can. When you can't hear it anymore, raise your hand. Great. We're going to do it a couple more times. So just stay focused. Follow the sound as closely as you can. Keep your attention soft, but focused. Good. We'll do it one more time. Yeah, so do we all. We'll do it one more time. Okay, and I want to do one more time. There's a lot of background noise. You'll be aware of the background noise, but keep your attention on the vibration of the bell. Good. What we're going to do is there are three different meditations that I want to do with you today. And one which we're going to do right now is a basic meditation on the breath, which we'll do for 10 minutes, and I'll guide you through. The other two meditations I want to do are about being able to change the perspective on our experience. So in one, we're going to tunnel all the way in, and one, we're going to go all the way out. And so you'll have three specific tools leaving today that you can experiment with. And as much as possible, try these during the week before next week. You might want to do them for 15 minutes every morning. or after school before you, you know, you get home, you're going to transition into something else, you're tired, you know, you don't know what to do. This can help transition, whether you're going to go just hang out, you know, do some sports or whatever you're going to do. This is a good thing to do, or before you start doing homework at night. Give yourself a little bit of time. Experiment with one of these. Don't create any stress. Just see what happens. So with the breath meditation, this is the fundamental practice of mindfulness. It's called Anapanasati meditation. That's a Pali word. Pali is the language that they wrote the original text from the Buddha in, something like 2,600 years ago, or 2,400 years ago, depending on who marks the time. And in these texts, there are volumes and volumes of these texts. They're unbelievably boring to read. And they're just, because it was an oral tradition, they had, so just picture there was this monastery in North India 2,400 years ago called Nalanda Monastery. They had 10,000 monks and nuns. And they used to do chant these texts over and over again. So to try to get 10,000 monks and nuns to remember things, you made them really tedious. So that's what they were. And these describe breath meditation. And the text goes something like this, where they say, I went to the forest and I was sitting in the forest and I was mindful of the in-breath and I was mindful of the out-breath.
I'm going to shut this off.
Sure.
No one will speak to me after today. But that's not necessarily right.
And then it says, you know, and I went to the forest and it was nighttime and I was mindful of the in-breath and I was mindful of the out-breath. And I went to the forest and the moon was shining and I was mindful of the in-breath and mindful of the out-breath. And this goes on, you know, for about 200 stanzas until the monks and nuns would chant this over and over again. Now, what's interesting about this is that what they were describing is that no matter what experience is passing across the screen of our awareness, in this type of practice, we simply are looking at the sensations of the breath going in and the breath going out. It sounds unbelievably simple. This is a practice that John Kabat-Zinn started doing at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center in Worcester 35 years ago, and it became the mindfulness-based stress reduction program that has been proven effective scientifically to help deal with heart disease, reverse certain types of heart disease, reverse certain effects of stress, and is now being used all over the country for physical illnesses, concentration issues, happiness issues. It's an old, old technique, and it's still incredibly effective. So when we start, I'll sound the bell and to the start of the meditation, what I want you to do is just pay attention to the air going in through your nostrils and then out. And I'll talk you through a little bit. Your mind is going to wander. It's going to be harder to do than you think. Just keep bringing it back. Part of the reason why it's so such a fundamental practice is we all breathe. It's a universal experience. It's not attached to any particular religion or dogma or philosophy. The breath is part of what keeps every sentient being alive. And in that, it's a common universal denominator of our experience. And it can be used as the backdrop of simply focusing and centering ourselves. As you do this more and more, it becomes a way of locating yourself and then allowing you allowing you to become aware of your experience without becoming attached to it. So we're gonna start. We'll do probably 7 minutes. And we'll just begin. So close your eyes softly or focus them on the floor in front of you. The bell, the lunch bells might ring. Just ignore them. Just keep going. That's just another object of awareness that you just let pass. Allow your breath to be natural. And pay attention to the sensation at the tip of your nose, the inside of your nostrils, with the air going in and the air going out. See how much you can notice. How small and refined the sensations can be. If you find yourself being distracted, as you notice being distracted, simply move your attention back to the breath. Notice the temperature. Is it different on the in-breath and the out-breath? Can you feel the air going in all the way through your nostrils? Notice where you lose touch with the sensation. you may start feeling happy and light. You may feel sleepy or distracted or irritated. Just put your attention back on the inhalation and the exhalation. Keep turning your attention away from your thoughts, away from the content of thought, and on the sensation of your breath. So can you open your eyes? How'd it go? What's that?
She said something.
Oh no. This is. I felt like my body got numb somehow.
Uh huh.
But yeah, I just tried to focus on breathing most of the time.
Was it unsettling or okay? You just couldn't feel anything particular. Mm-hmm. Well, what'd you feel? How'd it go?
I felt good. I felt like,
I kept worrying about my posture.
You kept worrying about your posture. So when you were worrying, did you bring your attention back to your breath or did you just worry?
Yeah. And I'm sick, so like only air is going through one nostril, mm-hmm. So it's really cold.
What else? What did you notice? You felt fine. Was it uncomfortable or easy? Who had a really hard time and just felt distracted?
I was distracted. I think it's just something don't think about breathing, so it's mm-hmm. so easy to like, oh, okay, I know what my nose is doing, what it normally does. Let me think about something that actually matters. So I kept on thinking about my posture, and then when I would bring it back to thinking about my breathing, I'm like, okay, where does the air go? Mm-hmm. So I'm like imagining going through my nose and then losing it somewhere in there and ending up in my lungs. So then I was thinking about the way my lungs look when I breathe.
Did you think the bio? Because I was thinking about the diaphragm, and then I was like, bio.
Oh, yeah. So then I was like, okay, I can breathe from here. And then I was thinking about how, every time I went back to breathing, like thinking about breathing, I like felt my nose do the tiniest bit of inflation, and then my nose hair is just going back and
forth.
Yeah, felt good.
Yeah. He had a lot of awareness. Yeah, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was also really
distracted. Uh-huh. By your thoughts or by feeling or by trying to do it wrong?
Well, every time I would try to think about breath, my nose is really dry, so it would mostly be painful. Mm-hmm. So then I would just kind of like, I don't know, I would start to fall asleep, but I can feel it in between the sleep. So then I would start cracking up because I like couldn't stabilize myself, so I was just kind of falling. And then.
Mm-hmm. What else? Yeah.
I kind of felt really distracted because I've always had this notion that when you meditate, you're supposed to meditate mm-hmm. so that you're not stressed and you think about the things that are stressed. So like it's a very linear definition. And that's what was in my head. Then when you said focus on the breathing, I was thinking more about your definition, and it de-stressed me while I was not thinking about the things. I was like, you know, when they say like when you don't think about things, they pile up,
mm-hmm.
stressed. So my mind kept going back to that saying, think about them, otherwise you're going to be stressed later.
Mm-hmm.
When I focus on the breathing, somehow I just wasn't stressed.
So you said something and you said something that were similar, you know, these ideas that I should be doing something that matters. I should be thinking about these things so they don't pile up. You said I should be thinking about something important.
Yeah.
So that's part of what this type of mindfulness challenges in us, because we want to do everything but do something that seems as not very significant as focusing on the breath, which we're going to do anyway. Part of what this does is the more we practice this, it enables us to, you know, to use the phrase from the 60s, be here now. Now, be here now, it was a great, great, you know, groundbreaking book that Ram Dass wrote, you know, way back when, and it kind of brought something into our culture. But it's not just a hippie slogan. It's valuable because we spend most of our lives thinking that we should be doing something else. And so because we're never with what we're actually doing, we stay on the surface of things and we don't get any depth. And when we don't get any depth, we don't get fulfillment. So this idea, this is fine, but I really should be doing something else, is what pulls us out. It keeps us on the surface of things, and part of the mechanism, the psychosocial mechanism, is we stay on the surface of the things because we don't really want to deal with discomfort and challenge of simply inquiring more deeply. So that's why the breath is a deceptively simple tool, and it's used. There's a beautiful documentary which I'll put on the site. There are two documentaries actually of this type of mindfulness meditation being used in prisons. One in New Delhi in the toughest jail in New Delhi in India, and one in Alabama in the Bible Belt in the South, which was really interesting. And one of the inmates there, I mean, they were pretty tough criminals, and the documentary, each person described, or you get a sense of what they had done to be in there. One person said that they had thought they had done everything that was unbelievably difficult that could possibly be done. You know, they had committed some kind of terrible crime. I don't remember what it was specifically. They had been through trial. They'd been through therapy. They'd been living in the prison system. They were, you know, there for life. But when it came to watching their breath for 10 days, that was the most frightening thing that they had ever tried to do. So this thing that there's something else is what this very simple tool challenges in us. And what it enables us to do is by doing it, when you're in the middle of doing it, it doesn't feel like a lot. But what it does is it actually also physiologically connects different synapses in our brain so we can focus and be present. So it's like a physical training as well as a mental, emotional, and philosophical training.
Amy?
Yes.
So your voice helps me to get back on track, so to speak. So my brain was firing with things that I want to do later.
Mm-hmm.
But then once your voice, I heard your voice, it actually cut off the stream, and I went to nowhere. So when we're alone, what do we do to make that happen? Or is that just going to be something that happens later on?
Well, as soon as you remember, it's a great question, because as soon as you remember that you're not supposed to be engaging with all that, you simply turn your attention back. Now, the challenge there is to renounce all of the voices that want to keep you distracted. I shouldn't have done that. You know, yesterday I was able to focus so much better. Why am I so distracted? Why am I not serious enough? How come I can't do it? I'm probably a failure. I'm sure somebody else, they would be much further along than me. All of those ideas. Now there are a few people, not that many, certainly less my experience, but there are some people who think, wow, I'm so great that I remembered. I'm really just like the best meditator. I am practically an awakened Buddha, and everybody should notice this about me because I remembered to return my attention to the breath. So you can go either way. Most people I know generally tend towards the negative, but there are some who always think that they are really great. Either one doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. You just renounce all of that, put your attention back on the breath, and consider it part of the training.
You train yourself to go back to the breath.
Yeah.
Without any.
Yeah, because even if you're distracted, eventually you're going to remember that you're meditating. And even if, you know, the timer goes off and you go, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to stop now. But we remember more than we think we do. And part of the rude awakening of this tool is that we realize that we know a lot more about what we're up to than we want to admit. So we kind of know that we're allowing ourselves to daydream, or we're allowing ourselves to fidget, or we're allowing ourselves to think that this is really stupid and care more about what we think than what we're doing. And when we catch ourselves, it's usually a number of thoughts after we were already aware. And this is part of the self-discovery component of this, is that you realize, oh, I'm more in control than I think I am. I'm more in control of stress than I think I am. I just haven't really wanted to be. So that's kind of, just don't punish yourself for it, because again, this is part of how the human brain works. Now, we have 5 minutes, right?
Yep, a little more.
Okay. So I don't have time to do two. How many people have like physical injuries that they struggle, like pain all the time? Broken foot, broken your neck. Everyone.
I'm also a hypochondriac, apparently. So.
You're a hypochondriac. Oh, well, that's interesting. Okay. So everyone else feels pretty good. You don't have aches and pains. Has anyone had injuries before that were really painful?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, what injuries?
Painful. Anything painful?
Something stabbing you, or?
Yeah, something like that.
It doesn't have to be that.
Please don't tell me that.
Like you ran 5 more miles than
the marathon.
I tripped on a banana peel.
Okay. All right. Well, good. You guys are all very lucky.
The cartoon. It's possible. I tripped on a banana peel and strained my foot.
So because this, most of you seem to not struggle with physical pain so much, I'm going to do, because there are two. I wanted to do one where we really focus in, but we'll do that a different time, and one where we focus way out. So this is going to be a guided I'm going to talk you through this. So it's going to be more imagery rather than a specific practice. But I want you to do the best that you can to really follow the instructions. And also because we don't have a lot of time, I'm going to try to do this. This is going to be really useful for you as you get better at it, particularly when you're walking into a job interview, a college interview, one of those face-to-face things that create a tremendous amount of anxiety and the world starts to kind of close in on you. This is a really useful one. It's also, the more elaborate it gets, and we'll do it again, but the more elaborate it gets, it's a lot of fun also. So sit up. And you can close your eyes or just focus on the floor. And we'll start with the bell. I want you to imagine a situation that you've had recently where you felt incredible fear, anxiety, or fury, where you got so angry, so afraid, or so nervous that you didn't know what you were going to do. Picture the room, picture the people around you, feel the emotion in your body. And remember what you were seeing as you look out in front of you. Now, I want you to picture yourself in business class of Virgin Airlines with great music, cold orange juice, flying 10,000 feet above the place where you were the scene that you just saw. Look out of the window, look down on the place, see yourself in that room. But now you're 10,000 feet above. Notice that you can't really see yourself. You can sort of see that block. You can sort of see that city. In that city, in that block, are thousands of other people. With thousands of other events, people are being born, people are dying, people are getting married, people are getting fired. Now, I want you to travel up to the Hubble spacecraft. From the Hubble spacecraft, look around. See all the new stars and planets. See if you can find yourself. See if you can find the planet that you're on from that first scenario. Allow yourself to experience the infinite space of the cosmos, the billions of stars and planets and moons. The vastness and complexity. Now feel the reality of those three different levels. There is a reality to the first. There's a reality to the 10,000 foot view. And there's a reality to being that far from the earth. Notice that you can shift back and forth. Great. And we can finish now. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Good work. See if you can practice this week. We're going to have a lot of fun for the next 11 weeks.